Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm really well, thanks Coach Steve. What number show is this?
Nick, we've made it the big 6-0 Challenge Weekly Show, episode number 60. And oh man, we are 5 years away from retirement now that we are 60. How exciting, Nick. What are you going to do in retirement?
I'm going to lift weights.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And that's the only answer.
Yeah. And that's it.
I want to be lifting
much the
weights.
Same as now.
Yeah. You know, there's this concept called the Centurion. Have you heard of it? Training for the Centurion.
No, but is it what when you're 100 something happens?
Yeah. So there's this training methodology where individuals will start preparing for when they're 100. Okay, so they would reverse engineer the normal process of breaking down muscle, because as we age, we slowly lose our muscle mass, called sarcopenia. And what individuals will do is at certain ages, they would have a benchmark about how strong they want to be, with the goal for when they're 100 that they can do activities of daily living, such as maybe getting off the couch, maybe picking up their grandchild. You know, be able to get onto the floor and get off the floor, you know, these types of activities. So let's say, you know, you're 100, you've got a grandchild or a great grandchild, and maybe they're like 15, 20 kilos. Okay. Like you want to have strength to be able to pick up that 20 kilos and maybe lift it up over your head. So you kind of reverse engineer from being 100. So yeah, there's these concepts of when we age about how strong we can be to be, you know, able-bodied humans. Because My worst nightmare, Nick, my worst nightmare is, you know, if I'm like, you know, 65, 70, and I can't squat. If I'm like, if I'm 80, I can't squat, like I'm going to have problems. If I'm 90, I can't squat. So, oh, geez, that's like, is it even worth waking up in the morning if we can't squat, right, Nick?
So I know.
We'll have all the
time in the world to squat. So we should hopefully be able to.
That's it. You can squat for breakfast, you can squat for lunch, and squat for dinner. How good. Mm-hmm. And then maybe deadlift for dessert.
Absolutely. And don't forget a little bit of a cheeky bench press.
Cheeky bench press thrown in the middle there.
Yeah. You should really set yourself up now for I was going to say, yeah, just have your little gym and have you're not going to have a walker, so you'll be fine.
I'll be fine. Well, look, I've got 70 more years until the Centurion. So I've got plenty of time to practice my squat, bench press, and deadlift. And hopefully it keeps moving positively rather than negatively as I age, right?
I wonder if we'll still be doing this podcast in 70 years.
In 70 years. Oh gosh, would it be?
I'll be 110.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that would be the new median age, Nick.
You know what? Like, why shouldn't I be?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Really?
Yeah. And if we do an episode a week, right, 50 episodes a year for another 70 years, what's 50 times 70? What, 3,500? So in 70 years' time, we'll be on episode 3,560. Oh, gosh, Nick, how exciting.
Do you want to know, though? The thing is, if you do 10,000 hours of something, it makes you an expert. So that means we still won't be podcast experts.
No, we would only have 3,560 hours. So we're still 7,000 hours short of being podcast experts.
Yes, we might have to start to do one every day.
We're going to have to. Gosh. Yeah. Well, look, Nick, we are exciting time in the challenge. We're in week 11. So just 2 more weeks left of the challenge. And gosh, the end is getting closer and closer.
Oh, gosh. It's really crept up this time, hasn't it?
It always does. It always does. And, you know, now in this like final 2 weeks, we could say that, you know, like those sessions get really important. Those meals get really important, especially as we kind of get to that tail end. If you want to be really competitive in the challenge, you know, now is kind of the risky time. If you want to, you know, have that like cheat meal or have that diet break or, you know, skip a few sessions, like it gets risky because we wonder like, what are the effects on our body, especially if we get to that tail end and especially if you want to be really competitive. So, you know, my advice over these next 2 weeks is, you know, put your head down, keep working hard, stay as strong as you can, as healthy as you can. And, you know, get to the end of the challenge, take those final photos, enter the competition, and we'll find out who the winners are of this January challenge on the awards night, Nick. The awards night's coming up real soon. How exciting.
Yes. I was going to do a post awards night announcement drum roll, but it doesn't have the same kind of
no No, I promise I'm going to sort out that drum roll situation. I've failed it, I think, 3 awards nights in a row, but I will sort something out. It's going to be good. Now, the awards night, Nick, is on the 6th of May.
Excellent. What you can do is with your Zoom, you can turn on the original sound, and that helps for it to come through the computer. I should have told you that ages ago. Because remember when I used to teach Zoom spin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The old original sound. We'll sort it out. We'll go through it. Now, yes, that's Friday, the 6th of May will be our awards night. They'll be kicking off at 7:30 p.m. and that's Melbourne time. So we have gone through the old daylight savings. So I sat down with everybody in Melbourne and decided that we would change the hours so that we're the same as the rest of Australia. And everybody in Melbourne agreed. And of course, everyone else in Victoria agreed. And we decided to change the time. So now we are on the same time as the rest of Australia, I think, except our friends over in Western Australia, who are basically in their own country at the moment, or Brexit. But we will be kicking off 7:30 Melbourne time. And that's where we'll be announcing all our awards for the January Challenge. We've got, the top 3, we've got the top 10, we've got our Community Award and the People's Choice Awards. Lots of awards to give out. And it's a great way that we can celebrate all the effort that you've put in into this January Challenge. So tune in live. That's live streamed to the Facebook social hub. So our Facebook group that we have online, you could tune in, you could watch it live, and you could find out at the same time as everybody else who our winners are.
Yay, I can't wait. It's a good excuse to put a nice dress on.
I don't think any of my dresses fit anymore, Nick.
I know, you're too big for your dresses.
Oh gosh. But yeah, we'll definitely put on something nice and it'll be a great evening.
Absolutely.
Nick, we're starting to get questions about what to do after the challenge or what to do in between the challenge. Okay. So to be straight with everybody, the starting date of the next challenge has not been completely set in concrete. So the concrete's been poured, but we're still waiting for it just to be set because we are moving into the M challenge in the next challenge. So the Max and the Maxine challenge will be coming together to be called the M challenge. And that's going to be all run via an app on your device. So let that be a smartphone, a tablet. And with that, of course, comes with strict timelines and making everything neat. So we can't say 100% for certain what date it will be, but it will be towards the mid to the end of May. Okay, so what can we do in that time? There's about, you know, maybe 2 weeks in between. Well, first thing I'd say is that I hope you have found the recovery diet on your nutrition workbook. Now, the recovery diet aims to slowly bring you back to maintenance calories, maintenance meaning that our body weight is no longer changing. So if you've chosen a weight loss strategy, hopefully we are losing body weight. Our body weight is trending down. And if we go through the reverse diet over the course of 3 weeks, your weight will slowly stop decreasing and then go to a position where it is no longer fluctuating up or down. So we're maintaining our body weight. On the other side, if you've chosen a muscle gaining strategy, you would be gaining weight and a recovery diet would slowly bring you back down towards maintenance, bringing your calories down slowly towards maintenance. And the reason why we want to slowly implement that is just to allow the body time to kind of recovery diet as we make our way back to maintenance. Because if we kind of jump our calories really quickly, you know, there can be some bigger changes that happen in our body, such as fat gain and things like that. So we want to just slowly implement that over the course of, you know, 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, because if you've gained muscle as well, you'll probably have a new maintenance. So you need to figure that out as well. So
Now on the training side of things, I hope that you have found the deload program. So the deload program, you find that on, I think it's on every single training template. So the weeks 1 to 4, 5 to 8, and 9 to 12. I do believe it is currently as a hidden sheet. Ooh, a hidden sheet.
Oh, hidden sheet.
I know. Yeah. Gosh, you're probably thinking, Steve, what the hell, hidden sheet? So what you can do either on a web application, so, you know, like a browser on your desktop, or via the Google Sheets app on your device, you can open up the program. You'll find a little icon that looks like three lines. We call that a hamburger, three lines. you got to click that one there. It's usually in the bottom left corner of the screen, and it'll open up a menu of all the pages, kind of like a book. You know, you kind of click in that button, it's like a contents page, and you better find the deload program. And deload program, similar to the recovery diet, is a program that is just slightly reduced in volume. So instead of doing, you know, 100% of activity, we're reducing it by about half, so about 50% of activity, allowing your body to recover. So a great time to go through the recovery diet at the same time as the deload program, as like a refresh, reset, as we get ready for the next challenge. So then when we think of like a broader picture about our body transformation journey, we're kind of going through waves. We've worked really hard over 12 weeks. We're taking 2 weeks off to recover, deload, reset, and we go through the next wave. And hopefully if you continue doing challenges with us, those waves become a little bit bigger in magnitude, and we get some really big long-term changes over the course of, you know, 2, 3, 4 challenges and beyond.
So if you are listening to this podcast, let us know that you've discovered the hidden sheet.
Ooh, yeah, by, the hidden sheet.
Telling us in the Facebook group, tag us. Ooh, and yeah. Tell us, I found the hidden sheet.
Found the hidden sheet. Who will be first to find the hidden sheet? I think I know who.
I reckon I know.
So let us know that you found the hidden sheet, the old deload program. And it'll be good, it'll be fun. But Nick, you know, there's lots of concepts in the challenge, right? Between training, nutrition, and you know, some of these concepts are really great when we're in a focused, structured program, but some of these concepts are really awesome to maintain through our life. Okay. So I understand that some people join the challenge, they do one challenge, and then they've developed all these skills that they're able to maintain that as they're moving forward. We'd love for you to come back and do another challenge with us. We understand that, you know, you might want to take some time off and so on. But it's a great time to think about what facets of the challenge are you going to try to maintain moving forward, right? Probably the biggest one that I would recommend that you maintain is aiming for that target of 10,000 steps a day. That's probably the biggest one. It's not only great for managing our body composition, you know, fat muscle ratio, also really great for our health and mental well-being. You know, being physically active and walking around is just an awesome way just to improve our health. Okay. But it's a great time to think about what could you implement in the challenge that isn't necessarily, you know, structured and organized like the challenge, but, you know, a new habit that you can maintain moving forward.
That's right. You don't have to implement everything. You don't have to. If something hasn't worked for you, that's okay. But yeah, the steps, that's a good one.
That's a good one. Other really big habits that hopefully you have implemented either directly or indirectly while completing the challenge are things like improving your sleep. We know how important sleep is for physical performance in the gym, also for hunger regulation, and also for like our recovery. That's when most of the body healing occurs, is within our sleep. So we hope that that's something that you've changed, modified, improved over the course of the challenge. And the last thing I'd recommend is that you maintain, you know, solid hydration. Now, many of us within general population are, you know, very dehydrated. We don't drink enough like fluid, pure straight water. And hopefully within the challenge, you have increased your water intake or focusing on hydration. And that's hopefully something that you implement in your daily life moving forward. So I think those three big things, maintaining your step, being adequately hydrated, and improving your sleep are really big foundation keystones that you can maintain moving forward. And you'll be pretty surprised how healthy you feel by maintaining those three things.
Definitely, definitely. And they're all free.
They're all free. Mm. They're all free. Unless you're buying bottled water.
True. It's like $9 for a pack of 10.
Oh gosh, so good. And look, Nick, we have been busy getting ready for the M Challenge, which will be launching soon. And part of that will be preparing for this app. Mm-hmm. So Nick and I have been busy in front of a camera, creating lots of exercise demonstrations, taking a whole bunch of photos and getting all the good things ready. So we've been super busy getting ready for that. It's always fun being in front of a camera, right, Nick?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we've got some more this week coming up. So no, it's really good, especially when we get to do our little training videos.
And, oh yeah.
You know, we can test ourselves and see if we can actually do the exercises.
I know, it's so good. It's so good. I think that's something we got to spend more time doing, Nick. You and I in the gym, lifting some weights.
Oh, 100%. Well, we liked the gym that we were in the other day. So we're welcome back there anytime. We can do it. We can have a training session
Oh yeah. We can do a mechanical drop set on that pendulum squat, and we'll break your quads. I reckon they'll be good.
Oh yeah. I'd like, if you start screaming at me, I reckon I could get 10 more reps.
Oh gosh. That's going to be juicy. That's going to be just a quality pump, quad pump, I reckon.
Come on, Coach Nick.
And then maybe a good old chest and bicep pump just for the bros out there. What do you reckon?
Oh, we have to. That's only we to have be to. Fair.
Yeah.
I think. Just pendulum squats and bench press. That's it.
That's it. The only two exercises in the world.
That'd be really great. I'm happy with that.
All right, Nick, look, let's move on to our non-scale victories for the week, where we celebrate those victories that might not be related to our scale weight or the number on the scale. So, Nick, take us away. Who have you found this week?
NSV. So about non-scale victories, they're so important to us. Just as coaches, it's one of our favourite things to look at. Okay, so I'll chat a little bit later about photos and things like that, and about how, you know, judges only get to see the final photos. We get to know you guys through these NSVs, and NSVs are what make up life. So that's my deep and meaningful. First one that I found was Amy Godsell. So hers was a Throwback Thursday combined with an NSV, which I love combinations. I like this. So Throwback Thursday, November Challenge 21 compared to today, possibly 2 kilos difference between the two photos, but chipping away at my midsection is an NSV for me. This challenge has had its downs for me, mindset, work stress, COVID, just to name a few, but I'm looking forward to the marathon in front of me. So she's understanding that life comes and goes with things, especially at the moment, sickness, and also chipping away at the midsection, which is actually probably a pretty good sign that she's got those things under control that we were talking about before, the sleep, the hydration, things like that, that really help lower your stress levels as well. So I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome, Amy. I love those like longer body like comparisons, you know, like going from like November to now in April. Like that's when we can see some really big changes in our photos. Sometimes, you know, those daily photos or even weekly photos, it's hard to really see if we're making a difference. But when you look at like month to month, like that's when we can go, whoa, hello, like I've actually made some significant changes in my body, even if, you know, other areas of progress might be slightly misleading. So that's all awesome, Amy. Keep up the good work.
Exactly. And also the other thing is with photos, sometimes you don't know what you're looking at. Like if somebody looks at it who understands the body in terms of where things are, they can go, oh, your lats look bigger and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just really good. Anyway, next one, we've got Adriana McCulloch. Hi, Adriana, how are you? So Adriana says, I have moved to maintenance in this challenge, so transformation will not be visible. So I like that because she understands that sometimes it's obviously more, it's not about the photos, it's about other things. So maintenance, as you were talking about before. But inward transformation is huge in terms of recovery from my chronic fatigue and getting consistency back in the gym and exploring the right nutrition for me. I've lost a lot of strength, which is to be expected, but I'm happy that it's slowly building up again and I'm finding my joy in the gym again. We'll aim for visible transformation next challenge. For now, I'm working on balance and recovery and inner health. Well, isn't that just a big non-scale victory?
I love that. That's awesome. You know, and especially like sometimes we don't completely understand like the impacts of things like chronic fatigue. And sometimes it's easier to push it to the side, like, oh yeah, you know, it's just a fatigue. We're all fatigued, but Adriana is probably working really hard to overcome those symptoms and get into the gym and, you know, look after her health and her mindset and her approaches to, you know, fitness. And, you know, maybe it does take a little bit of time off to be able to push back in. So that's awesome, Adriana. Keep working hard. And I know you're going to long-term make some really amazing transformations and changes to your body.
That's right. And also, yeah, sometimes we just do need to take a step back to take a step forward. That might sound like a cliche, but, you know, you can't keep pushing in one direction if your body's not agreeing with you. You do need to just take a step back. Sometimes it might not be about the pictures, and start from the inside and head outward. So okay. Well done.
Yeah.
All right, Jess Freeman, my NSV today, I bought 3 pairs of these leggings about a year and a half ago and I could barely squish myself into them. Today I decided to see how hard they would be to get on, and to my surprise, they slid on like butter. I've waited so long to wear them. it's moments like these that make me so proud of myself. The scales may move, the measurements may drop, and the photos may change. But when you put something on comfortably that was once a challenge, it really reinforces all of your effort and hard work. I can't wait for my workout now. Well done.
So good. I love that so much, especially when you buy like clothes that might either not fit or just be a little bit uncomfortable to wear. And then you maybe change your body transformation, you put it on, you're like, oh yeah, wow. Like it's such a big confidence building thing, and it must be amazing to feel. Congratulations, Jess.
Yeah, congratulations. That's really good. I love it. I love that for you. And I love the fact that you brought three pairs of them. So they must be super cool leggings as well.
So good.
I would do that. That's something I would do like every day.
All right, I've got a couple here, Nick. So the first one goes out to Yvonne Thorne. Yvonne, I love this one, performance-based NSV. And she writes, the scales may not be shifting too well, but the weights are moving nicely. How good does a PB feel? She posted a video where she did two sets of 10 at 253 kilos on a leg press. Love that so much. Kind of a scale victory because we're looking in the weight, but not that type of scale victory, but I love that. I love it when it's a performance-based goal and performance-based win. And, you know, especially when it's big weights, like a quarter of a ton. That's awesome, Yvonne. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's awesome. Big weights, Yvonne. And yeah, if you're looking for the scales to go down for any reason, they're probably not, because if you're going to be doing that, you're going to be getting some quads on you.
Quads of the gods. Love it. Mm-hmm. Next one here goes to Kim Horsey. And Kim writes, I was feeling very disappointed because I haven't trained in 2 days as I have COVID. Oh no, I'm sorry. She then writes, then a light bulb moment. It doesn't matter because I'm committed to this as a life change, not just 12 weeks. It's okay to rest my body when it's sick. And I love this as an NSV because, you know, the old spicy cough, it's going to come and go, and it may affect us for, you know, the next couple of months or years to come. And you know, this fitness endeavor that we're all on the path and the journey towards is not just for 12 weeks. It's a lifelong thing. And I hope it is. And I hope it is something that you're working towards as a centurion, or to be able to squat into retirement, you know, something that is, you know, for a long time. And if it does mean that you have to take 2 weeks off because you're sick, or, you know, your child gets sick, or, you know, you've got a work deadline to meet, or you've, you know, rolled your ankle, whatever it is, and you have to take some time off. We hope that that doesn't mean it's completely derailed your journey. You know, it's just a little bit of time off, and then you're back at it, working towards it and looking and doing it for you, and it's a commitment. So I love that, Kim, and congratulations.
Good on you, Kim, and shout out. I've also seen your transformations. You're a good egg, you're a top woman, and you've been doing really well. You've been investing in you know, doing stuff for yourself and your body, and it's paying off. Well, so done. Good.
Last one here goes out to Christine Savage. And Christine writes, you know, you must be doing something right when a gym instructor comes up to you and says, maybe I should do a Maxine's challenge. Changes must be showing. Oh, gosh, I love this, Christine. And how good does it feel when someone else notices your hard work that you put in, especially someone who maybe works in fitness, a gym instructor, noticing that you've made some changes. And that's always great to hear. And it's great to feel when someone else says that. So big congratulations to Christine.
That's right. That could actually just be an ad.
It could be an ad.
It's that good. Love it.
Good, gosh, on you, so good. Now, big congratulations to all of our NSV participants this week. If you're experiencing an NSV, let us know. You can write about it and make a post on our Facebook social hub. Maybe make a post on Instagram and tag Max's challenge or Maxine's challenge. And in the future, tag the M challenge. That's going to be cool on Instagram. Or you could write about it in your journals. That's where we find most of our NSVs. So you can make a post about it in your journals.
Yep, 100%. It's our chance as coaches to celebrate you guys.
So good. Nick, let's move on to our coaches' corner, where we offer our tip for the week. Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Coach Nick's Corner. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about the end of the challenge, how you're going to feel, what if you don't get the recognition, quote unquote, for your hard work that you would like to get. So I will tell you a little bit about a story about my first competition, what I actually did. This is in terms of bodybuilding, because I think that that's probably out of all the endeavors that I've done the most relatable to this. But Yeah, we were chatting, Steve and I, well, you are Steve, so I can say you love, the same as I do, a good muscle gaining phase. And that's one of the things as coaches that we both love to see, particularly for women, because it's been something that maybe women have been afraid of doing, you know, afraid of gaining fat, afraid of, quote unquote, getting bigger, a bit unsure, because it's still something that I suppose it's getting less and less of a mysterious thing now. I mean, there's a lot more education around it, but previously I think people were really struggling with how to approach it. So the thing with this though is visually it might not be super, super visible, you know, because in terms of the before and after photo, nobody's going to know that you got up at 4:30 a.m., you know, that you're building this muscle, that your lats grew a little bit bigger, you know, that you've gained even some scale weight. It's not really that visible to people who don't know, you know, that sort of a thing. So how do you get pleasure out of this? Just say you don't get recognized by the judges who are looking really for quite significant transformations, you would say, in the top 10 from what I can see. How do you manage this? How do you manage that feeling? What do you do? I think you need to go back to your why. Why are you doing it in the first place? So if you're doing it for recognition, then you might be disappointed. And that's not to be negative, because I think it's really good to figure it out now. So when I first competed, I was already lifting pretty heavy. I was a bit of a powerhouse on the bike, all that sort of stuff. And when I dieted down, I was really, really quite thin, quite skinny. I was one of those people that had abs, but I really didn't have glutes or quads or anything. I don't even know how I could lift the things that I lifted. But I also probably took the diet to the extreme because it was my first time. When I stood up on stage, I did okay, but my feedback was, to do really, really well, you're going to have to lift heavy and get some PVs in the gym. Now, I can tell you, I thought, wow, I can't believe that they don't know that I can deadlift, you know, whatever the amount was at the time, which is more than I can do now. So, like, I can do 155 now. So it was like 170 or something. Imagine having them say that. And like I identified as this strong person, and I thought, oh my gosh, you're kidding me. Don't you know that that's the one thing I can do? So I sort of understand where people are coming from when they go, but you've told me to gain this muscle. You've told me it'll be better for me. And yet these people with all these abs, they're getting all the recognition. It's the long game. So just remember to play the long game. You don't need to worry too much about winning or losing, because you are going to be winning in the long term, I promise you, just in general, because you know what? The more muscle mass you carry, the actual better you end up looking. Yes, you might have a little bit of body fat, but that's pretty easy to diet down. Gaining the muscle's the harder but more enjoyable part of the process. Also, just in terms of everything, you know, to take away from the challenge, I just want you to all consider all the good things that have happened in your life since starting the challenge. I want you to think of all the habits that you've formed, as we spoke about before, what you're going to keep, what you're going to pack away. You know, it's a subjective judgment at the end, but it doesn't take away any of your work. And you can tell yourself, I want to be in the running. I'm going to do this or that next time. Or you can just say, I'm going to learn as much as I can. I'm going to instill healthy habits, and I'm just going to enjoy where it takes me. And then you might find that you end up looking absolutely amazing as well, as a byproduct of all your NSVs. I think it's really important to learn how to master the basics. So in terms of that, it's like, you know, get your routine, go lift your weights, find out that foods are not bad or good. That's the other thing I want to say. You don't have to cut everything out. You just have to learn how to manage it. So once you can tick all that off, then you can go in any direction you want. And I just want you all to know that we support you very much as coaches, don't we, Coach Steve, with this muscle gaining process.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I think you're so right, Nick. It's like the most, it's way more challenging to build muscle than it is to lose body weight.
Mm, And I think, you know, we're right behind you with this. You know, it you might look exactly the same in your photo, or your legs might look bigger or just slightly, or but not defined yet. That takes a while. It takes a long time. And then there's a little bit of a dieting process that goes into revealing everything as well. So one step at a time. And yeah, just remember that the judgment of this is subjective. It doesn't take away anything from you, but also on the other hand, it doesn't take away anything from the people that have won as well, because chances are they've gone through that extreme, like a real extreme to get to where they get to, you know, that exotically lean, as you would say, Coach Steve.
Yeah. Like, I think it's so difficult, especially in a challenge like this. You know, we have thousands of people enroll in the challenge, both on the Max and Maxine side of the challenge. And, you know, many of us are striving for something like the top 50. Like, you know, if, let's say there's 1,000 people doing the challenge. There's a few more than 1,000 people doing the challenge. There's 1,000 people doing the challenge, and, you know, you want to get in the top 50, right? You know, that's in the top 20th percentile, right? You know, you're really in that top 5% if you get in the top 50, right? And if you want to be in the top 10, if there's 1,000 people, right, you're in the top like 1% of people, right? And then if you're in the top 3, you're in the top 0.3% of people. Like, we need to remember the amount of people that do a competition like this. And if you are unsuccessful in getting the top 50, like, that's okay. Like, it's not the end of the world. You probably did put in a lot of hard work. We understand that. But it's all about how are we going to learn from that? Because it could be that you were working really hard, or it could be that, hey, you could have put in more effort, right? And that's the approach that we should be taking about things like this. You know, it's just like a bodybuilding show. Like, if you're up on stage with, you know, 50 other people, and you didn't get looked at by the judges for being in the top 5 in the call out, it's like, okay, well, maybe back to the drawing board, and you need to revisit how you're approaching your diet, how you're approaching your training, how you're approaching your lifestyle factors. And then how we manage that is such a big, like, personality and character building experience, right, Nick? Like, how we manage those emotions that come with that is hard. It's crap. It feels horrible, but it's about, you know, that expectation of when we enter competitions like this, or bodybuilding, or whatever it is, what are we going to do when, you know, things don't go right? And that's, I think, part of life, isn't it?
Yeah. And I've done enough of those shows now to have a little procedure for myself that I'll just share before we wrap this thing up, before we wrap Coach Nick's tips up. But for me, I now will not do an emotional reaction either way for the first, say, 24 hours. So whether it's good or bad, I just leave it. And then after that, I can take a deep breath and look at it all without huge emotion, without feeling tired or hungry or weird. And then I can kind of have some grace about it, because I think when you do your first emotion, you often regret that as you get older. You know, I've done different comps where I've been a pain in the butt. Like, when I used to do okay at triathlons, I remember I was just a pain. I'd be like, I beat that person. And it was not nice. So I can just say, like, it's really good to just take a deep breath. So just say the awards night's on, take a deep breath. If you're having a glass of wine or something like that, just chill. You can write it all down, and then maybe, like, wait a day or two and see how you feel after that. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, wise. Wise advice, Nick. Nick, for my Coach's Corner, I want to talk about one of the advanced training methods called supersets.
Yep.
Good old supersets. I'm gonna preface this, acknowledging my bias that I'm not a big fan of supersets, Nick.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of supersets. Yeah. I think that they are a cool tool, an effective tool, but I think they have a really high over application, and might have a misleading purpose about, you know, how beneficial they might be. Okay, so that's my bias, but let's talk about it. Okay, so what is a superset? A superset is when you perform two or more, kind of. The traditional superset is two, but sometimes, you know, we could do three, four, and beyond. But then there's a line between superset and then a circuit and stuff. But for this definition, we're going to go with performing two exercises back to back with minimal rest in between. Okay, so that's the operational definition of what we're talking about today, doing two exercises back to back with minimal rest in between. Okay, now there's a few different types of supersets, right? You know, there's kind of concepts where we do like the same like muscle group, but we might do, let's say, a multi-joint activity, like a compound movement, like let's say a squat. You know, we're using our hips, knees, and ankles, and then we'll superset that with like an isolation exercise, like a leg extension. So you might do like squats, and then as soon as you're done with your squats, you go straight to a leg extension, and you would do a superset that way. So it might be like a similar muscle group, and there might even be different muscle groups. So let's say you're doing a bench press, that would be like a pushing movement, and then you might do the complete opposite as a superset, like a pulling movement. So you might do a bench press and then go straight to like a row. So that would be one way that we could do it. Other ways we could do a superset is like an upper lower superset. So you might do like your squat lower body, and then you go straight into like push-ups and you do your upper body, right? And then there's more advanced kind of concepts like a pre or a post exhaust superset. So similar to like our squat leg extension idea, you might do leg extensions first to like exhaust the quadriceps, and then you go do squats straight after. So it's like a superset that way. Or you might do the other way, similar to like a kind of mechanical drop set, where you might do squats and then go into that leg extension to do that superset. So kind of you can see how they overlap a little bit between like compound isolation, pre, post, push, pull, that type of thing. So there's a few different ways that we can do supersets. Now, the potential benefits of a superset, first is that it increases the total amount of volume that we do. So if you did, every single exercise as a superset, 2-2, you'd be able to just do more volume in a shorter amount of time, right? So if I go to the gym for an hour and I do my exercises, then Nick's also in the gym for an hour and she did supersets with everything, she would end up just doing more volume, right? So the more total sets. So then she'd have a higher load that she's placed on her body, right? So that's one potential benefit. The other one being that it's better for time, right? So, you know, if you've got four exercises to do and you did two supersets, so you did one and the other, one and the other, you know, you could be in and out of the gym quite quickly. Awesome. Great. That's a big tick. That's a win. The other potential benefit is that it increases the total intensity that we're training at. So if you're doing like a pre and post exhaust superset, you know, you get a really high stimulus on certain muscles. And for my physiology bros and sisters out there, you know, we get a really high threshold and recruitment of those high threshold muscle fibers, where, you know, that can be really great for things like hypertrophy. Yeah. So muscle building. So really great way to ramp up the intensity. And finally, it's really great for aerobic training, right? So aerobic training, you know, kind of in that like cardio mindset. And also if you think about the energy systems, like our anaerobic system gets a really big workout. So that's that like glycogen and lactic acid system. If some of you who did maybe like PE in high school, or maybe you did some energy system stuff once you've finished high school, but that's kind of like where we're training different energy systems, looking at the way the carbohydrates play a role, and also really pushing our cardiovascular fitness. Because if you're doing back-to-back exercises, your chest is pumping, and you're out of breath and you're sweating. So these are all really awesome things that come with supersets. Now, with those great things, I do think we do need to talk about the limitations. So not cons, not negative side of it, just limitations of supersets. So on one side, we get to really drastically increase our intensity, but with the intensity comes fatigue. Okay, so the higher intensity that we train, the more fatigue that it places on our body, and then that accumulates over time that we need to recover from. So if you're doing every single exercise as a superset, you will reach a threshold where you can't continue training at that high intensity. So if you are driven to keep wanting to do supersets, what will happen is you'll naturally decrease your overall intensity. Okay, so what I mean, throwing some numbers at you, you could do, let's say, a squat 100 kilos at 10 reps, right? That could be like your you know, 9 out of 10 effort, high effort to do that load. If you choose to do a superset, what you might do is you might be able to get those 10 reps at 100 kilos, but then as you go to do that superset with a leg extension afterwards, the leg extension, you might only be able to use like 5 kilos on the machine and get like 5 reps out because it's, you know, a very high intensity. If you then wanted to continue doing that over time across 3 sets, you may have to either reduce the total reps that you do or the load that you do with the squats. So instead of doing 10 reps, you end up doing 5 reps just so you can keep doing your superset. So what ends up happening over time is you use less total volume load than through doing supersets than if you just did straight sets. Okay. So over time, you end up scaling it so that supersets make it easier than rather making it harder. Okay. With that increased fatigue, of course, increases the risk of injury occurring, because when we're tired, you know, that's when our form doesn't have the same repeatability. If you're tired doing squats, you know, the squats could be all over the place. But if you're focused in that moment, that's when it's go time. Especially if you're doing back-to-back exercises where, you know, your cardiovascular system is being challenged, you know, that's when it does increase that risk of injury occurring, because, you know, you might start using things like momentum and, you know, relying on our connective tissues to continue getting reps out. Okay. Next problem we face is a limitation in repeatability. Okay. So let's say you did one superset, and with our squat example, 1 week you did 10 reps at 100 kilos, and then you were able to do 10 reps at 5 kilos with a leg extension because you're really exhausted. But then the week after, you try to do 12 reps at 100 kilos, but then you're only able to do 3 reps in the leg extension. There's a really difficult way to compare those two bouts of stimulus from one another, right? Because ultimately what we're trying to do is repeat the workout at a higher intensity. And if those reps and weights are skewed with multiple exercises, it's hard to repeat that over time. Okay. And the final thing would be that concept of like an interference effect. So, you know, as we start challenging our cardiovascular system, that could be the limiting factor in our ability to do more reps. Okay. But look, I think ultimately the idea of supersets and other advanced kind of training methods is that we want to kind of get sweaty. We want to get like, you know, like out of breath slightly. And we, some of us correlate that to, you know, maybe burning more fat. So we get into this idea of, oh, well, I need to do a superset or a giant set or a cluster set or whatever language we want to use, where, you know, I'm really challenging my cardiovascular system. It makes me feel like I'm working really hard. I get sweaty. And then, comma, that means that I am also burning more fat, which isn't true. So if you feel like you need to do supersets so that you can kind of get sweaty, so that you can feel like it's a cardio workout, that could be a limiting factor in your ability to lose weight. Okay. Mainly because, you know, we can't repeat that over time. And if your entire approach to training is based on that idea of getting sweaty, out of breath, and, you know, doing that kind of like cardio approach by doing supersets, you know, you might be building your house of training on a house of cards, and it could just topple over, where you probably be better just doing straight sets. You know, each exercise, you focus on your squats, do maximal effort on those 3 sets, and then move on to a leg extension, and then move on to a hamstring curl, and then move on to a calf raise. Do each exercise one at a time, so you could repeat it over time. And then we could see some quality leg growth. We can see some quality changes in our body composition, rather than trying to, you know, push lots of supersets. The only caveat I would say would be like, you know, maybe in that last set, you wanted to turn it into a bit of a drop set, just to ramp up that intensity. Okay, sure. Maybe, you know, one or two here or there, no dramas. But if you're building your entire workout around supersets, that might be your limiting factor to progress, and the reason why you're not seeing big changes in your body. So that's supersets. And I will say again that my bias is that I'm not a big fan of them, probably why you don't see them a lot in the challenge training programs. My bias, you might have a different opinion, but I do think that they are limiting in a training sense.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. Anecdotally, just my own experience, since I've stopped doing them, like for a while there, I was doing them all the time, and pre-exhaustion stuff and everything. And I never got to squat what I squat now. Mm. Like I can confidently say I could do the 100 for sets. I could do it for 10, and I could probably do it 3 times, mm-hmm. You know, and there's no way ever in this world that I could have done that a few years ago. And it's just because I give myself time in between. So you didn't pay me to say this. I'm backing you up completely. The only thing I will sometimes do is if I'm doing some finishing off exercises, just, you know, for shoulders or something, I might combine them, but that's at the very, very end. And that's just for a bit of a pump in a way.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not the main game.
No. And I do think it does have its place, you know, for like my bodybuilding physiology bros out there, like, sure, it does increase, you know, cellular swelling and metabolic swelling, and, you know, it does help with the pump by, you know, especially if it's similar muscle groups and, you know, one after the other. Sure. Usually it works really well in like an isolation sense. So maybe you could do like a mechanical drop set, kind of in the same category as a superset. Awesome. Great. But I think if you're building your entire program around supersets, I do think that we kind of dial down that intensity so that we can keep doing supersets. So we dial down the intensity to ramp up the cardio, and then we're no longer having, you know, significant time under tension or time under significant tension, TUST, where, you know, where we're really building some muscle, where we're just making ourselves tired. And that doesn't really lead to a lot of fat loss. We want to stimulate muscle growth. That's the goal.
Yeah. And you're leaving, as you would say, the gains on the table.
We do. We're trading the gains for, you know, some cardio gains. And it's, again, that's great if your goal is to be fit, if your goal is to, you know, get some cardio in, if you're time poor, awesome. Great. You know, these are great things. But, you know, if you want to be really specific with our goal here, we're trying to build muscle, burn fat. It probably is a limiting factor.
Yeah, if you want to be a boss monster.
A boss monster.
Nick. Tag me if you want to be a boss monster.
Nick, let's move on to some questions for the week. Bit of a speed run. First question here. Do you record your weight, including the bar or without? Nick, what would you say?
This is a hot topic of conversation on the Facebook group. In all honesty, it doesn't matter as long as you are consistent. Although, like, to be honest, I love to know, especially like with my big movements, you know, squat, deadlift, I will include the bar. I mean, for goodness sake. But yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, say, for example, if I'm doing a glute drive, I don't know how much that carriage weighs. I don't know. So like I would, if there were, you know, I had a few plates on either side, I'd count the plates. But for me, it's important to count the barbell in squats and deadlifts and overhead presses and things like that. Bench press, that's my own opinion. But as long as you're being consistent, you can do it either way.
Yeah.
So no one's right, no one's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And I do think that, you know, when you're training with your kit, right? So it's really, it becomes tricky when you're trying to repeat a workout with different kit. And what I mean by kit is different barbells, different plates, different machines. You know, example would be, let's say, a lat pull down, right? Most of us would kind of, you know, see the number on the lat pull down, be like, oh yeah, that's, you know, 30 kilos, 50 kilos, whatever it is. Sometimes it's a number, you know, number four, number five, right? If you went into a different gym or used a different machine for the pull down, that number, even if it's the same number, could be different because the machine's slightly different. The pulleys are set up different ways. The actual load that you feel when you pull can be a little bit different, right? So I think at the end of the day, you want to be training with a similar kit. And even, you know, different barbells, sure, they weigh different amounts, but I often lift with an Olympic barbell, right? It's actually a power bar. So it's at a certain thickness. It's at a certain weight. It's at 20 kilos. If I went and lifted at a 15 kilo bar, the thinner one, it would feel different on my hands. If I did a deadlift, the bar is thinner. So it'd feel different. So it wouldn't be the same exercise. It would be slightly different. Could I get a good workout if I'm at a hotel gym? Yeah, sure. Like I could, but for like long-term gains, we're training on a similar kit, especially if it's like within the same meso meaning maybe like 4 to 6 weeks. We want to be doing the same type of exercise and recording in a similar way. So I agree, Nick, you know, it doesn't matter if you record your weight with or without the bar, or if you give it a number, like, oh yeah, it's two plates each side, so you're right number two, or if you want to give it a name, oh yeah, like I'm picking up the red kettlebell, so I'm going to call it Sally. Okay, I'm going to do Sally Rose, and then next week it's going to be, you know, Sandra, and that's the green kettlebell.
Eagle,
you know, right? Eagle, whatever. Like it doesn't matter how you record your weight, as long as it's repeatable and it's a way that you document your process.
True. The only thing is, though, I'm just thinking, say you decided to squat with a safety squat bar, they are actually 35 kilos, or a trap bar weighs different. So if you're going to squat, you sort of need to know, because like if you're just going to put what you would normally put on either side and then you go to squat, you're actually 15 kilos over a 20 kilo bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it kind of pays to know, just for your own physical safety, and also to go, wait a minute, I'm not doing so bad.
Yeah.
They're just little things. And also somebody did say, if you're trying to say that it matters, you're just showing off. It's like, bloody oath I am. I did not work this hard to not know exactly what I'm picking up and putting down, and I'll own that.
Yeah. I hear. I would also go on to say, like, different bars have different like feels to them, right? Mm. So like, you know, if I squatted with my bar, high bar squat would be one thing, low bar squat would be another thing. And then if I went and did a safety bar squat, like I wouldn't be putting the same numbers as I put on any of those lifts onto a safety bar, regardless on the weight of the safety bar, because it's a different movement pattern. So yeah. I would also challenge that a little bit, Nick, because I would say, yeah, like I to me, it doesn't matter too much about how much the bar weighs, because it would be a different movement. And I would record that differently than if I was to approach a low bar or a high bar.
I know, but some people don't know that.
No,
like some people just be like, this is a barbell, I'm going to put it on my back, I don't know how much it weighs, and I'm going to put the same if I'm squatting. These are the weights that I use.
True, I agree. And look, I'm with you. I always record the weight of the bar just because I want to know objectively how much I'm lifting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you always want to record what you're lifting with a barbell. I think with machines, like let's say like a leg press, very difficult to determine how much the sled weighs, or, you know, like you said, the glute drive. It's every leg press and every machine is slightly different. Some of them are quite light, some of them quite heavy. I think you face some problems when you assume certain weights. So I have seen some people misunderstand the Smith machine. Yeah. Smith machine, the barbell is actually really super light. Mm-hmm. It's about, I think it's like 5 kilos, 2.5 kilos, something like that. So if you're assuming that you've got, you know, two plates either side and you're doing 100 kilo bench press on a Smith machine, you know, that might only be, you know, 80, 85 kilos. It can be slightly different. So it's tricky to assume, especially if you want to do that crossover effect between those two different lifts. Yeah.
Look, knowledge is power. Maybe we should just say, like, with barbells, give it a crack at knowing, and with machines, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Look, I'd go back to the same as whichever way you choose to record, just be consistent. Yeah. That's the main one, right?
Yeah.
Nick, next question here is, I see people online squat all the way to the bottom and it hurts my knees when I do that. What can I do instead? Okay. So we're talking about the knee. We're talking about knee flexion. So being able to bring, you know, our hamstrings to our calves. Now, I do think that all of us are, the majority of us are able to do that movement. You know, if you go to stretch your quads, you probably grab your shin and pull your leg towards your buttock. So you'd be able to bend your knee. Most of us would be able to kind of bend down to the floor. Like, you know, let's say you're going to go pat a dog. Right. You know, most of us would kind of like go into a squat position, we'll let our heels lift and would like sit on our heels. Most of us are able to do a movement like that, you know, pat a dog or talk to a kid or something like that. So most of us are able to go through that motion. What might be the limiting factor is through a squat exercise, your body doesn't feel comfortable or balanced or in control to be able to go down that low. Okay. So what can we do? We can just limit the range of motion. So you just don't have to go down that low. You know, you can go down to a point that you feel comfortable and stand back up. Does that mean you're missing out on the exercise? Well, yeah. You know, you are missing out on a big portion of the exercise. You're just cutting the range of motion short. But if it's the question of doing a squat at a shorter range of motion versus not doing a squat at all, okay, well, we need to, you know, find a way to stimulate our quadriceps. You can just squat down to a bench or a chair or a box and progressively make that box lower and lower as you become more confident going, you know, deeper and deeper into knee flexion. Most of the times, the inability to go into knee flexion does represent a potential weakness in the quadriceps. So your brain doesn't want to bend the knee the whole way because it knows it's not strong in that position. So it says, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to do that. Which then means that you don't go into that position. You don't train that position. And then it's a negative, it's called a negative positive feedback loop because you just kind of get weaker and weaker in that position and never go down that low. So it might be worth regressing the exercise to take away the load completely, maybe hold onto like a suspension rope or like a pole of the squat rack or something and lower yourself down as low as you can go and stand back up. Even if that means you need to raise your heels up, that's fine. Even if you need to go into like an assisted position, maybe with a resistance band, and slowly build up strength again in that bottom position. And you probably find that with a little bit of time spent at that bottom position, as you get stronger and stronger, you become more confident at the bottom. And that's why you get people like, you know, Coach Nick, who can sit at the bottom of a squat and, you know, have 100 kilos on her back and no dramas, because she's got the strength at the bottom of the squat, where maybe it hurts or it feels uncomfortable at the bottom of the squat because you're not strong at the bottom of the squat.
I also have, I have weightlifting shoes though. Mm. Like I don't bother not wearing them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't wear them all the time, but just in spots these days.
Yeah. I do enjoy elevating my heels, especially when I'm doing like a quad focused squat. So, you know, things like a high bar or like a front squat, I do choose to elevate my heels just because I can get much deeper, much more comfortable and a much more quad focused squat. But when I'm doing my powerlifting squats, that low bar squat, I'm normally on flat feet because I'm trying to use more hips in the squat. So less knee focused. Yeah. But it kind of gets tricky depending who you're talking to, right?
Yeah. But your quads are like, even Jim at the gym said he's got good quads.
Ah, don't be like that, Nick. I think I have a bit of a bigorexia where I think my quads just don't grow. So I train them as hard as I possibly can. So
it works.
It works. So I think, you know, similar to what you were saying in Coach's Corner, where, you know, it's been a very long slog with building certain muscles of mine. And even now I'm still not satisfied with, you know, the size of them. And I'm still looking for ways to continually grow and grow and grow. And even I think like they're not growing, right? So
can you please show us an old photo of Coach Steve with big quads? Did you ever not have big quads?
Yeah, no. You'll probably actually see some videos on your training template of Coach Steve when he started the challenge, probably about 3-ish years ago, where I was much skinnier than I was now, both mainly weight wise. You know, I'm much more full than I was then. So yeah, you probably can see some videos of me with smaller quads. But I've always been like a well-rounded person. I never avoided certain muscle groups. So when you say don't have quads, like I've always had those muscles, but they were definitely smaller than they are now. Yes.
Well, I'll go and stalk them before we change them. So
yeah,
I better get in and have a look at them before they all get pulled down for new ones.
For the new ones, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nick, next question here. Could I have an Easter egg while on the challenge? Does it matter if it's dark, white, or milk chocolate? Nick, Easter around the corner. What are we going to do?
Can I just say, like, we are so mean to make, you know, the last week of the challenge fall on Easter, especially because, you know, without harping on about lockdowns and things, it's like in a couple of states, it's like probably the first time you've had Easter with your family for a couple of years. And it might be an occasion, but in all honesty, you can, but you've just got to watch out, obviously, look at the calories involved, because it's quite easy to overconsume. And if you tend to be somebody who goes, stuff it, I've had one thing, then now I'm going to have the rest of everything and I've ruined everything, that's where you go downhill. Like if you just had one thing, I'm not going to say a bunny, because everyone knows how much I love bunnies, so we don't eat bunnies. We can eat eggs. But yeah, in terms of, you just want to control the portion, and also in terms of what type of chocolate, it's not going to matter to lose weight. I will just say, white chocolate it's actually even more calorie dense, I think, than your brown, your darker chocolate. I think it's maybe 50 calories more or whatever, but just keep an eye on that and look at the calories. But also, yeah, if you're sort of going for your final week of the challenge and you're going for that super lean look, you might want to just wait. You can just pop those eggs aside. But yeah, there's no reason why you can't have an egg.
Excellent.
Excellent. Of course you would say that. Set an example.
Example.
Are you going to have an egg?
No, I'm actually not a big fan of chocolate, if I'm really honest.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You're going to have a hummus egg.
That's right. Yeah. Some hummus on a plate, I reckon. That's going to be where it's at. No.
What if I, we're doing some filming tomorrow, everybody. What if I brought some hummus? You would be so upset because you would have to eat it.
I would. I couldn't not eat it. Like that's
because we've got to film our meals.
Just please don't bring home a snack.
I've got two tubs of it. I'm bringing it.
Oh gosh, look, Nick. Last question here. I want to have big arms, and I do lots of curls, but they aren't growing. Any advice? Okay. First thing we can say is the principle of specificity. Okay, so we want to have big arms. Remember that we need to think about the whole arm, and I'm going to assume that this person was talking about maybe the upper arm, right? Because they're talking about curls, they're talking about biceps. Okay, so remember when we're looking at the upper arm, we've got the biceps, of course, doing most curling activities. You know, okay, sure, we can turn the wrist different positions and we can focus on different portions of the muscles there through the brachioradialis and XYZ. But we can't forget the back of the arm, the triceps. And, you know, on like when we look at anatomy purely, the triceps are much bigger muscles than the biceps. Okay, they're huge. Arguably, maybe 2/3 of the arm, upper arm is like the tricep, and then maybe 1/3 is the bicep. So the first thing, specificity, if we want to have big arms, sure, we want to be doing, you know, lots of curls, but we also want to be doing lots of extension movements where we're training the triceps in a few different positions. Sure, that's the first thing. The next thing I'd say is to review progressive overload, or just the principle of overload. Because if you're doing lots of curls, maybe that's implying that you're doing lots of volume. So you may be trying to do, you know, cable curls and preacher curls and Bayesian curls, and you're trying to do incline curls and decline curls, and maybe a weighted curl here and a W curl there, and all these other different types of curling motions. So you might be doing lots of volume, and when we scale up the total volume of exercise, what happens is we need to give somewhere. So often that then decreases the overall intensity. So instead of potentially doing, you know, 3 hard sets of curls with, you know, 20 kilos in each hand, you choose to do, you know, 10 sets of curls with like 5 kilos in each hand. So you do more exercise, but then you've just decreased the intensity, or decrease the total load used. So then my next bit of advice would be to consider overload, right? So progressive overload, where we're slowly adding, you know, a bit of load each time. And you may find that, like, simplifying the process, so instead of doing lots of different curls, maybe you choose, let's say, like 1 or 2 curls, and then maybe 1 or 2 extension movements, and focus on getting like really, really good at that, right? So, you know, what's that old like martial arts saying? Like, you know, don't fear the man who knows 1,000 punches or something like that. Fear the man who's practiced 1 punch 1,000 times. Have you heard that one, Nick?
Yes, I have.
Maybe I butchered it. Right. Let me know if I butchered it.
No, I think that's right.
But, you know, it's the same as, let's say, like a bicep curl. You know, instead of doing, let's say, 30 different types of bicep curls because you want to train the short head and the long head, and you want to train it in a lengthened position and a shortened position, and you want to train the internal rotation, external rotation, right? Instead of doing all of those things, you might be better by just getting really, really good at, you know, a couple of exercises, being able to feel a really high level of stimulus. So, you know, when you do that bicep curl, you get a really big like bicep contraction. It almost like it hurts. Get a really big pump in the bicep afterward. Awesome. You know, focus on that for 4 to 6 weeks and then kind of change it up over time. So, you know, the big takeaways for this individual: one, don't forget the triceps make a big part of the arms. 2, focus on overload. And 3, you might need to reduce the total types of exercises, get really damn good at a few of them, and you might find that your arms just kind of explode a little bit, which is always nice when we get big arms that fill out t-shirts, and we can start wearing the old medium size, you know, the small medium, where, you know, it looks a bit too small for our arms. That's always a nice feeling for my bros and the sisters out there.
And then you can kind of just go and flex when you're going
You don't even need to flex at that time. You can just go and go and then you know that I've got an arm there.
That's right,
your arms and arms. But, you know, like I think when it comes to like arm training, like I don't do a lot of direct arm work. I think I get a lot of it from like those bigger compound movements, like, you know, focusing on rows and bench presses and chin-ups and such. Like I think indirectly we get quite a bit of stimulus in our arms. And I don't have the best arms going around. I'm not the best bodybuilder going around. But, you know, it does look like I work out, even though I don't do a lot of direct arm work these days. So, you know, we can see some really great results by not doing lots of curls and focusing on just those bigger compound movements, those big bang for the buck exercises, getting really good at those, lifting some heavy loads in those, and you may find that the rest of the body just follows as we grow and get bigger.
True, because what pulls the lat pull down as well? Like, you know, you need to use your arms for that. So get good at that.
Yeah.
Get two for
good.
One.
Get good. All right, Nick, look, let's wrap it up there for episode number 60 of the Challenge Weekly Show. Woo.
Wow. Well done. Congratulations for 60 hours hanging out with
60
me.
60 hours. Gosh. Nick, if you've enjoyed this episode, go check out the 59 other episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show, and we'll catch you next week for episode number 61 and week 12. Woo, around the corner.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.